Item 12, from the Director, Department of Parks, Recreation, and Culture, submitting an informational report on the status of the Estabrook Dam Rehabilitation Project and Phase 2 of the Milwaukee River Channel Sediment Project. This item is informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Mr. Healy, Mr. Keegan, welcome.
Chairman, Supervisor, Jim Keegan with the Parks Department. Alongside of me is Kevin Haley, landscape architect with the Parks Department, who has been dealing with Estabrook Dam and the whole Lincoln Creek, West Milwaukee River watershed for a number of years now, and we wanted to give you guys an overview of where we are on a couple different subjects related to the river. And so I will turn it over to Kevin to give you a presentation, and I will take questions.
Mr. Healy.
Thank you, Chairman, Supervisors. As Mr. Keegan said, a couple projects going on at the same time and place, hopefully. This summer, the spring construction season is upon us. We've been planning for many years, and we felt that it was an appropriate time to get the committee up to speed on exactly where we're at and where we're going. So if you will indulge me, we're going to walk you through a little PowerPoint here that we'll talk about where we've been with the contaminated sediment cleanup project, where we're going, and then we'll get back to talking some specifics about the Estabrook Dam. As you're well aware, I certainly hope, we've been doing a contaminated sediment cleanup project in Lincoln Park, the Milwaukee River. And we have completed successfully phase one, cleaned up the bulk of the river. We are now engaged in a second phase of that, working with our partners at the US EPA, Wisconsin DNR, Milwaukee County, and our consultant, EA Engineering. And what we're doing is we have a plan in place that, as you'll see, we're very close to implementing to, in essence, go after and clean up the last of the remaining contaminated sediments in this section of the river. If you look at the exhibit on the screen, the phase one area shown in blue, that is the first phase of the project that we cleaned up. It runs from on the west Green Bay Avenue down through Lincoln Creek and into what we refer to as the Western Oxbow. So everything that's blue has been cleaned up to standards established by the team at great cost and labor, and it's done really well. The whole park has been revitalized and fixed up and is looking forward to a new beginning. The area in green shown as phase two is the area that we're going to talk about. And before we switch, do notice for reference down in the lower right-hand corner the location of the Estabrook Park Dam, because we'll be moving in that direction. There's the area that we're talking about within the box. We have a thing called the area of concern. It's basically those rivers, Milwaukee River, parts of the Little Menominee, that have specific environmental impairments that impact the quality of life in the environment. It's been designated at a federal level, and there is, fortunately for us, funding available for projects to remediate in there. These are the beneficial use impairments that the areas of concern tries to address. We have several of these issues impacting the Milwaukee River, particularly in this area. Most of our waterways carry fish and wildlife consumption advisories, the degradation of the benthos, which is the bottom of the river, if you will, restrictions on dredging activities, and certainly habitat for wildlife populations have all taken a bit of a nosedive, because there is a large quantity of toxic chemicals that are actually in the waterway that we're hoping to remove. The first, I mentioned phase one and phase two. There was actually sort of a pre-phase that we did in the Lincoln Blatz area. It's the old swimming embayment right in front of the pavilion just south of Hampton Avenue. We went in basically to do a cleanup and to use it as a model to see whether it was reasonable to go in and excavate these types of contaminants, remove them without basically stirring things up and making a worse mess. So the concept was to try and do localized areas, small cells we would excavate and then fill immediately upon completion. That was a very successful project. The state DNR paid for all of that. 300 pounds of PCBs removed out of a whole lot of sediment. It was a very successful project. From that, we moved into Lincoln Park Phase 1. This was funded through the EPA with the Federal Legacy Act. EPA picking up 65% and the Wisconsin DNR picking up the remaining 35%. And basically, if you will, it was a wall-to-wall cleanup, a dredge of this section of river. We would dewater areas, let them dry out, and then excavate all of the sediment, in some cases 10, 12 feet deep, and take it to appropriate landfills. That was very successful. When we were done with that, all of the areas of the adjacent stream banks were restored to native vegetation, and it's really opened up the park and made it a great place to be. Phase two, we're going after the last of it. I'm going to click through some of this stuff fairly quickly, but basically we have done a lot of sampling out there in the river to determine exactly where we have contaminants, at what depth, what they are, and the best way to go about getting them. So I'll just sort of click through this. You'll see this is the fixed crest spillway on the Esserbrook Dam. It acts sort of as a little pocket, if you will, with the major flows moving up and to the right through the gated section. We have the tendency, and you can actually see it here, where large amounts of waste and sediment have actually trapped behind the fixed crest spillway. There's also a lot of wood and debris that moves downstream that accumulates here, making it difficult to get at. Second round of sampling, we weren't able to get a lot at first because of the debris. We have been able to now get in there behind the dam structures and sample. This is just showing what we found. Now, notice we're going for PCBs, which were banned in the 70s, suspected carcinogenic substance. We're also looking for PAHs, which are oil-based products. We'll talk a little bit more about. So the red area is phase two. We've delineated it into zones. What's kind of interesting, if you look there, the tan areas inside of the red, they look like sandbars or sediment bars. That's exactly what we're going after. These contaminants had a tendency to attach themselves to the sediment where they've remained since they were put down in the 30s through the 70s, and now we have the ability to go after them. If you look at the left side, the western oxbow, you can see all that tan material that's been removed. And now we're going after the red area here. The little blue bands there are showing all the transects of sampling. Basically, wherever we knew we had known sediments in the river, we tightened up the gap to 200 feet. Elsewhere, we took every 400 feet and basically sampled the sediment from bank to bank to get a very definitive answer, not only on what was there, but where it is. And in many cases, this material is actually laying there under cleaner sediments that have been deposited over time. So we needed to have a good handle on just what we're going after. PCB is the same sort of testing results that we did. PAHs, again, these are the petroleum-type products. We ran into them in the phase one cleanup. We were prepared for them in phase two. This is more of the sampling that was done to actually determine how much and where of each of these substances there are. These are some shots taken during the phase two work. The top shows a cofferdam steel sheet piling that was used to help dewater dry out an area for excavation. The lower photos, unfortunately, are showing a surprise that we found once we got into this area. We were chasing predominantly PCBs, but we found a large amount of this gooey petroleum product, which, as it turns out, was the result of a lease many years earlier up Lincoln Creek that found its way downstream to this area, caught on fire, and the fire suppression activities at the time were to add dishwashing detergent, if you will, emulsify it, and get it to sink. We didn't realize it, but it's been laying under there, under the sediments for all these years. We were able to retool and get all of this out of here. It did bring something to our attention, though, that we have this. There are a few other areas in phase two where we have found it through our sampling and therefore have a strategy to get it all out of there. It's pretty nasty stuff, and it's all gone. This is the neat little tank device that we use to get in there and do some of the sampling in the river through the ice. You can imagine that it can be difficult with the flows to actually get on there, so we were able to work through the ice, or partially, as you can see in the lower left, to pull core samples and collect the data that we needed to. This is some testing that we did. There was a lot of high-tech things that we looked at to try to detect the presence. Simplest was probably the lower right, where there's a Sudan dye that you mix in a glass of water or a jar of water, and if it turns like that picture, then you know you've got it. It was a fairly low-tech solution that allowed us to save a lot of time and money in terms of determining where this material is. NAPL, non-aqueous phase liquid, tarry, greasy stuff is what it is. Now we're starting to look at the results of those samplings. The blue areas are the larger sediment bars that we go after. If you look to the top where there's pink, these are areas where we actually found PCBs and NAPL together and have developed a strategy for that. This, if you look at it, we'll get another reference to this, but those blue areas on phase two, those are the only deposits that we have determined require remediation. As I said, with phase one, we were pretty well working bank to bank and excavated everything here through our extensive sampling. We were able to narrow it down to just these areas where those sediments are, and you'll see much more isolated piles, and again, lower right, you will see the sediment deposit that's accumulated behind the Esterbrook Dam in the middle. It's just a little detail on that. So the blue areas are what we're going after in phase two. Everything else has been deemed clean. More sampling results. Feasibility study. Basically, this is all jargon, but we did a focus feasibility study. It looks at what have you got, what are the alternatives, what is the best way to go after it. We learned a bunch of lessons with phase one, so in phase two we were able to focus it and more quickly get to the essence of the problem, determine exactly what we were after and where it was. Probably saved a lot of money and a bunch of time. That feasibility study then looks at all the alternatives, everywhere from doing nothing to removing everything. We look at options like remediating it in place, capping it, using natural organisms that might help it decompose over time. Basically, very similar to what we'd done in phase one, we went with an alternative four, which is dry the areas out, excavate it, get it all out of there. We do have a 4A because a couple of these deposits are small, and we may be able to do that with hydraulic dredging, which is basically, think, a giant vacuum cleaner going and sucking this material up and then taking it to the landfills. So we pursued alternative 4A. We've done a lot of public outreach throughout the entire process on all of these projects. We had an open house in August to talk about the alternatives we looked at, what they meant, and we probably got a pretty good concurrence from the crowd that we were pursuing the right thing. The key element there is the solution was to collect it, get it out of there, and make it go away. So this stuff is not there to come back and haunt us. The river should be clean when we're done with this. Again, we're looking at the targets for excavation. Note the better vision here, but some center lower area, very narrow strips along the banks of the river where this stuff has tended to accumulate, and those are the target areas. Water treatment, once we start dredging activities, everything that comes into contact with the water, that water all needs to be processed, filtered, and made clean before it can be placed back in the river. So we're getting some pretty sophisticated equipment to make sure that happens. TSCA is an acronym for the heavier sediments of PCBs that need to go to out-of-state facilities. We try to separate those so we don't have to take the expensive, so the cheaper materials can go locally and the expensive materials go out of state, so we can isolate them during collection. I mentioned it before, once we're done with the excavation, everything that we touch and disturb gets restored, native vegetation, things that are appropriate for the banks, for the access and staging areas, where we got into athletic fields or picnic areas, they were all restored in turf. We'll take the same approach this time. This is just a quick glimpse of the design. I have a binder that's about 4 inches thick with design. There's a lot that deals with what it is, how we dewater it, how we access the site. I won't bother you with that, but it has been well researched, believe me. A lot of regulatory requirements, as you can imagine, that we need to go through, and I will say that we have successfully accounted for all of those. We'll talk a little bit more about that. Timeline, we got to the 30% design. You saw a piece of that back in November. We actually do with the Army Corps of Engineers a value engineering study where they look at all of our work and say, hey, it looks good. Did you think about this? How about trying that alternative? We got some pretty good feedback out of that. This time with phase two, there will be three preselected contractors that EPA will hire one of them. They'll be giving competitive bids on the same documents. Theoretically, low bidder would be given the contract. But the point is Early in the design process, we provided those three potential contractors with the plans so that they could, again, do value engineering, look at the things that we may have missed, or a lot of times they can come up with better suggestions for access. We took those comments and weaved them into the design. The technical review committee was the group of about 20 very scientific people down at EPA headquarters, where we went and made a presentation and said, here's where we're at, here's how we got here, here's what we're proposing to do, in essence asking for the grant money. It was very well received, and as you'll hear, the funding has now fallen into place. Lots of permits, lots of timeline. These are goals. We're working on it. As I said, we have almost all permits in hand. Those that aren't in hand have been applied for and are pending. A lot of work involved in that. The design is at the 95% plus stage. We're just tweaking it, if you will, with the hope to mobilize for excavation this summer, target date of July, but that'll be weather dependent and approvals. The main, I think, goal here is we're trying to get all of the sediment remediation, the removal done yet this year before winter settles in, so that all we have to do is focus on habitat restoration in spring and all the big equipment can go away. Cost is a steep price for phase two. We estimate about $18 million. Again, the Legacy Act through EPA is providing 65% of that. Locally, the non-federal share, 35%. In phase one, the DNR provided that local match. This time, the county has allocated $4.2 million for the local match, and the DNR has agreed to pick up any overages above and beyond that, above the $18 million. So the money is in place. There is a contract which we have negotiated, the county and the DNR have signed off, and we expect to have signatures back on that within days from the federal government. That will commit all of the funds and allow us to move forward with the final steps of mobilizing. Now, we're just jumping back to the aerial photograph here because I'm going to make a quick jump over and talk about the Estabrook Dam, but put an image in your mind, if you will, of where the deposits are, and in particular the lower right-hand corner, the blue, which is that which is trapped behind the dam, because that's one of the issues we need to deal with there. This is an aerial close-up of the area around the Estabrook Dam, and if you forgive me, I'm going to step up here so I can point. Interstate I-43, Fort Washington Road running north and south. The river flows generally this way. This is the dam itself. Two major components. One, the straight line that goes from our bank. We own all of the East Bank, Estabrook Park. There's a wall of 10 gates that can open up and down to control water levels. Then there's an island. That island is owned by the Bureau of Land Management. And then this squiggly line is what we call the fixed crest spillway or the serpentine. And it's basically designed so that when the gates are closed, the bulk of the water moves over the spillway here, but yet when the gates are opened at various stages, flows move this way. You'll also see a white line there of ice breakers, which are meant to deflect ice and debris downstream rather than into the dam gates, could cause a problem. One of the issues that we'll talk a little bit more about is access. The county does not own any of the land on the east side, so we need to acquire access rights for not only the removal. The sediments that we were looking at lay behind this structure, and almost all the way up, you can actually see the little waves to an area about there. It's fairly apparent that the flows move this way, and the sediments have settled into that area there. Okay, access to the dam is a big piece of this all. As I just stated, the county owns the entire East Bank. It makes it pretty simple for us to get there. We do anticipate a staging area that would come in off Hampton Avenue and would be restored when it's done. The West Bank is entirely privately owned. There are three businesses that operate there. I've been meeting and negotiating with them for many months. They have all agreed to provide us the permanent access easements that we need. This is an important piece of this all because in order to do sediment cleanup, repairs to the dam, both short and long term, we need to have access to the West Bank. It's not clear from the real estate records how the dam was built, but many parts of it are located on private property and we have no way to get there. So when the DNR directed us to repair the deficiencies, if you will, one of the requirements they said is you need to be able to get to the West Bank and to all parts of the dam for maintenance, both near-term and long-term. So an essential piece of this was getting those easement rights. As I said, with the private property owners, we're in good shape, and they've committed to providing us easements that will work for both the Phase 2 sediment removal and any ongoing dam repairs, short-term or long-term. Now, on the right side, we get into another piece of this. I pointed out the island that's located between the two dam sections. That island is under the control of the U.S. Bureau of Land Management. We approached them and asked for the required permit to get access to their island to do repair work. They said we can accommodate that. There's a permit application you need to submit. We did that. As they reviewed our application, they basically responded that before they could feel comfortable in approving it, we needed to do an environmental analysis, which is a study of potential impacts, and it needs to be compliant with the National Environmental Policy Act because of being federal land. So that forced us into a little bit of a pause, move back, and take a look at the other alternatives that might be there to rather than just repairing the dam, which is the path we've been pursuing to this point in time. So we're going to talk about the environmental analysis, the EA process. We have just received the first draft of it 24 hours ago, and we'll be going through that in great detail. But basically, the environmental analysis required us to go through an alternatives analysis, just as we did in the other projects, where you look at what the options are, weigh them, and decide which one or ones you're going to pursue. Once we've got the environmental analysis complete, we'll provide that to the Bureau of Land Management, and they will hopefully say you can use our island for scenario A, B, C, or D. This speaks to access. Again, the blue is the river, the water. It also includes the 100-year floodplain and the wetland areas that would be associated with the banks. The red lines are a little bit obscure, but they show how we plan on getting to the backside of the dam. The property owners there, the large building and parking lot is Wheaton Franciscan's headquarters, Barnabas Office Suites, and the Hilton Hotel all have riverfront property, and they have agreed to allow us to gain access to this. So this gets us access for the cleanup and any repairs or modifications that are made to the dam. Get our arms around the environmental analysis. We assembled the technical advisory team, about 20 people from many organizations. We've got all kinds of expertise. We brought them together, indicated what the problems are, and looking for solutions. It's been very productive. They have all just received a draft copy of the environmental analysis. We will be meeting this Friday morning to take our first punch at it and say, does it make sense? Are there any glowing omissions or errors that we should be addressing in the interest of completing and updating taking the draft EA to a final one? We do plan on continuing to do public outreach. We'll be issuing notifications for a public information meeting at which we'll present all of this information. You're sort of getting a preview of that now. That notice we're anticipating going out by May 22nd. We would then post a copy of the environmental analysis on the county's website so the public can review it. And we'll have a public meeting, hopefully June 5th, at which they can ask questions, bring it. That's sort of in the middle of the public comment period. The thought being people can have an opportunity to look at the environmental analysis, see where we're going, understand it, then come to the public information meeting to ask questions and see exhibits, and still have time to put any comments that they have in writing for the draft EA process. We're hoping that'll be open to the public for several weeks. They submit their comments. Those comments are then taken and woven into the document, if you will. We look at what the recommendations are and try to find ways to address any concerns or suggestions that might be out there. And we're hoping by the end of June to have that out, distributed to the approving agencies, and that will give us some direction moving forward. A lot to absorb. I'm prepared to answer any technical questions, but what we wanted you to understand is we're moving forward. We have a lot of the steps accomplished over the next month or two. A lot will be coming together. We'll coalesce. We may or may not be back in front of you with updates, but we're to that point where it's time to start moving dirt and getting some activity going.
Very good. Questions of Mr. Haley. Supervisor Haas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Haley, very detailed presentation. I value a lot of the information that was in there. Do you know, north of the site in question, say around where Brown Deer Road crosses the river, do you know if there was contamination up there as well?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, all of the testing, and you saw the extensive amount we did in this area. In previous years, the DNR and EPA have done testing upstream. By and large, this is the last of it. There are some little bits up in Cedarburg related to some of the smaller dams that were up there, but the goal is, and I'll tell you, this is one of the reasons that EPA has invested the huge amount of money that it is this will clean up the river.
Fantastic.
In a significant way.
And, okay, do you know, was there contamination there?
No. To the best of our knowledge, it really occupies the areas that I've shown. It all tended to coalesce in these oxbow areas and behind the dam.
Okay. So like 30 years ago, 40 years ago, probably not?
We cannot find any evidence of contamination upstream.
Okay, well, cool. It's been in my mind ever since I started hearing about this stuff, because about 30 years ago, you could find me in the Milwaukee River on the banks around there. So. But if you can look at this growth on the bottom of my foot, Mr. Haley.
No. My license doesn't cover medical procedures.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're supposed to be wearing a mask.
Further questions? As a matter of fact, 60 years ago, I was actually a witness to the fire that took place behind the incinerator plant, which is just east of Moe Park currently. And the black billowing, it was just an incredible sight. And I think I was 9 or 10 years old. I often wondered what because the river itself caught fire. The river was burning, which in my naive state I didn't realize could occur. At any rate, Supervisor Lipscomb.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It occurred to me when all the members were sitting here originally that half of them haven't had to vote on this, even though this has been probably our longest-running capital project. With the money for the dam repair, I think, was approved 6 years ago, and it's been a continuing struggle to see this through. I think what you see with the remediation is that there was, between the two phases, about a $50 million of investment, federal, state, and local, that really needed to occur first. And much of the delay has been about our cooperation in coordinating that effort and making sure that we could leverage all of those funds appropriately. Because the dam repair itself is small in comparison. But I'll just say this. Our reward for that cooperation is a lawsuit. So, you know, we're currently in a lawsuit with Riverkeeper suing us. They're in the room here. They would like a different outcome. They've always wanted a different outcome. But I just think that has to be understood by people, that was the result of our cooperation on sediment cleanup, is that... because it's delayed the dam solution repair, and because that DNR order has placed that requirement, it's been extended a couple times, and it's now the end of 2014 is when the repair is supposed to be completed. You know, we now have the parks saying that we're on this parallel path and that both of these projects are supposed to be completed at or about that time. And I hope that's the case. I do still have some concern. I mean, the BLM requirements on the island and how the Bureau of Land Management plays into this final determination is still of great concern to me. I mean, I just don't. The good news that I heard today was that we've got agreement on the easements. That was new to me. But I still have great concern about the timing, and particularly how BLM is going to play into this in terms of whether they're signing off on this EA. and accepting an alternative, and particularly because what wasn't discussed was that the alternatives are things that we've never talked about. So, you know, there's always been talk about do you remove it or repair the dam, but the alternatives are a number of complex alternatives about rock ramps and partial removals of the dam and things that may be acceptable, but they're very different than anything we've ever talked about. So I just want people to be aware of that.
Well, it's good of you to bring those things to our attention. Since you do raise the fact that there is another point of view that prevails, we have that should be heard. We have four people who asked to speak today. I'm going to call on Ms. Nan because I think she represents, and since you raised the subject, Supervisor, she represents the other point of view, which I think it's important that we hear. And then we'll go on to Mr. Gable, Mr. Dorner, and Ms. Ross.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairman. My name is Cheryl Nan. I'm here on behalf of Milwaukee Riverkeeper. Thanks for letting me speak briefly. I just want to say really quickly before addressing the dam issue that we're in support of the PCB removal project and have been really active and involved over the last probably 10 years or so, trying to get as much state money as possible to help fulfill those state cost share requirements as part of this cleanup and past cleanup. So we're very much in support of that and appreciative of all the county's efforts and the professionalism of the county staff in working on those issues. So going on to the dam, we sued Milwaukee County, I think it was around 2.5 years ago, for failing to maintain and operate the Esterbrook Dam in good working condition. There had actually been three different repair or abandon orders that the county had been faced with from the DNR going back to 1987 that were pretty much ignored because there wasn't funding available to do what the necessary work that needed to happen on the dam. And, you know, frankly, there were concerns about if the dam would fail, loss of life and property and impacts that could have, that could be pretty severe. Because of that, the dam has actually been open for, it's at least over 3 years, and I think maybe the residents know how long, but it's been open for quite a long time because it's been deemed to be unsafe to impound water. So the county agreed with us, the county circuit court, about 2 years ago that the dam was a public nuisance that needed to be abated, and we've been waiting for about 2 years since that initial ruling to kind of let this whole environmental analysis process play itself out. We're very happy, frankly, that, and this is to maybe Mr. Lipscomb's comment, that, you know, the EA is allowing for other alternatives to be looked at that were never looked at. Frankly, there was basically removal looked at very cursorily. There actually was an ordinance, I believe, at one point from the county board that removal and other options not even be considered, that only repair would be considered. So we are very happy that the EA is looking at a variety of alternatives that could, hopefully abate the nuisance here. So we're happy that that's happening. There's the environmental, social, and economic costs are being looked at. And we're waiting to see, as this EA comes out, I think as everybody else, what's the new information in there on the hydrology and kind of environmental, social, economic impacts. We have heard and we've received draft versions of different materials, per request by our attorneys, that there are different options that are being looked at, and some which I think are very good compromise options, where there would be removal, partial removal, and rock ramps, as Supervisor Lipscomb mentioned, which would basically allow for fish passage, allow for recreational use, and allow for the water levels to be raised slightly to help alleviate some of the concerns from the local residents. So we'd very much hope that the county board would look at those new compromise solutions very seriously, because I think that, we're definitely hopeful that they could, potentially, be a good compromise for a lot of the issues that are on the table. If the county continues with the dam repair option, we'd be very concerned about that, mostly because of what I mentioned before, that, there's been ongoing issues with this dam back to the mid-80s. We all know that the county has a lot of conflicting demands on its resources, and we would definitely have major concerns whether repair would abate the nuisance, given the very, costly maintenance that is required with a 100-year-old dam. Moving into the future, we certainly don't want the county to spend millions of dollars and be back in this room 5 years, from today, because, again, the dam is open because it's unsafe, and basically unsafe to impound water. There is a limited lifetime to a dam. This dam is very old. And just repairing the dam, continuing to repair the dam, that's going to require, at least 20 years or more of you know, maintenance by the county board that's going to be very expensive. We certainly think removal of the dam, or even, you know, maybe considering some of these compromise options that the county consultants are looking at, you know, might be a really good option to improve water quality, improve fish passage, improve recreation, and improve quality of life for the majority of Milwaukee County residents. So we certainly hope that you look at the EA seriously, and we, you know, we ultimately hope that there'll be a compromise. But we would be very concerned if repair is chosen and whether or not that would abate the nuisance and likely, you know, would go to court basically to have judicial review of whether or not the selected alternative would abate the nuisance. So hopefully that helps.
Thank you. Questions of Ms. Nin? Apparently not. Thank you for that presentation. Mr. Glenn Gable? Is it Goble or Gable?
Gable.
I've forgotten, Glenn. I thought it was Gable. The German pronunciation.
I don't say it that way because that would be like some gobble or something like that. Thanks for the time, everybody. I just listened to what Cheryl said, and I wanted to bring up a couple things. That ongoing maintenance, the ongoing maintenance for the dam, that's smoke because it's been clarified the tower revenues out of Esterbrook Park are to cover items in Esterbrook Park. Okay, so those costs are covered. Some of those rock alternatives would make servicing that much more expensive, though. Okay, regarding the dam, according to the county's engineering firm, AECOM, it's structurally sound and should be usable for many years to come. I believe they projected out 60 years. The idea of loss of life or property if the dam failed, that's been dealt with repeatedly in official DNR documents, and it would have very, very little impact downstream if you're familiar with that area. The DNR has stated that. Now, you may not have seen this, but basically they want to get rid of a perfectly good working dam that's controllable and can change water levels for flood protection. This is a FEMA flood control community. Flooding occurs there very often, twice in 2010 with supposedly 100-year floods and another one in 2008. Controlling the water is extremely important. There are about 80 homes in that area, in that reach of river, that are directly affected by the dam. If we include Lincoln Creek, there are over 100. And that Lincoln Creek area does flood a lot, and they've had out-of-court settlements with the sewage people. I don't need to go into that. Okay. You haven't probably seen a lot of this area, but back in the 30s, over 2,000 people were involved in a federal flood control project, and they installed seawalls, and they dynamited about 6,000 feet of stone out of there so water would flow smoothly and wouldn't flood over 600 acres of Milwaukee County. And what we want is to have the dam repaired. The dam is in... It could operate right now except for some safety issues. Those safety issues are more like workman's comp type safety issues. Chipped stones in the stairway, bad deck, that kind of thing. But the dam can operate right now, and it has been operating right up to the time that they wrote the order. So it's operational. It will be more operational. It will be more sturdy once it's rebuilt. We want option A, rehab the dam. It's the only alternative that returns the Milwaukee River in that reach to its historic natural water level. It is also the only one that provides the same flood protection as it had before. It is the only one where you won't have to step an extra 14 inches down to get onto your boat, and it's the only one where someone's boat could move throughout the entire area, have the water rights and navigational rights that we enjoy. And it's, by the way, this reach of river It's the only lake in Milwaukee County where you can put your own boat in the water and use a motorboat or a rowboat or something like that. It's the only navigable waterway, inland waterway in the city. Not everybody wants to go on the busy downtown river where all these boats are plying the waters or out on Lake Michigan where it's rough. Now, these rock walls that they're asking about or the alternatives in there, there's some of them that would put our seawalls underwater. There's other ones where it would be so far out we'd have to redo our backyards or there'd be a wall to fall off of. Another thing, too, is with the rock ramps, those are technically, they have to be complied with Chapter 333, and it's still technically a dam. So cleaning out the debris is the most expensive ongoing maintenance that the county pays for. If they put a rock wall in and they can't lower it down, that maintenance all of a sudden goes much higher because instead of somebody pulling in with a treaded vehicle, a shovel, they're going to have to do that some other way because it's going to be about 7 feet underwater. Also, there a lot of these choices in the alternatives, and I know you haven't seen some of it, but a lot of them were developed by Sewer Pack. And Sewer Pack used Manning's roughness coefficients, and they modified them because we submitted some information and said, hey, what used to be river is now overgrown by trees, and there's going to be rock, or there's going to be log jams, there's going to be ice jams. We've had it before. Fortunately, this spring we didn't have it. But when those trees growing in what was a river this wide is now a river this wide, and there's trees growing in there, and when the ice comes down in the winter, those trees will stop the ice. Or they'll stop log jams during flood conditions in the summer. Well, Sewer Pack did take our study and said, hey, yeah, there are trees. We better go and adjust Manning's roughness coefficients, and it's right in their study, and they mention our organization that I've worked with in the past. But they only did it with the trees that are there now. Some of them are as little as my finger. Other ones are 4 inches across and 25 feet tall. That's how much they grew in the last 6.5 years. Okay, well, those trees are going to keep growing, and I asked about it, and they said, well, no, we just sort of adjusted Manning's roughness coefficient to we don't know what it's going to be. Another thing is they used for the rock ramps a study called Reconnecting Rivers Natural Channel Design. I read that study. It warns about using that type of a rock ramps and so forth in an urban environment with a river our size. So right in that study it says be careful with this. To make a long story short, it's all about the footprint that the water takes up. You make that footprint smaller, trees are going to grow in there, and the conveyance of that water is going to go down. We need to have both navigational waterways. We need to not have loss of property values and consequently the loss of tax revenues for the county. We need to protect the county from potential lawsuits from the taking of the value of that property. Those properties are 56%, the land value is 56% higher than equivalent land value directly across the street. The dam and operating the dam is the only really safe way for Milwaukee County to proceed. I believe that some of these other alternatives came into place due to the BLM, and they wanted to have other alternatives. Milwaukee County had, on several occasions, had votes and already supported it not unanimously. There was a couple of people that didn't like the idea, but yeah. But anyhow, we got to fix the dam, and we got to keep it operating. And the rock ramps are still not going to get you away from having to maintain and fix the dam. I'm very concerned that people would try to sue if their property value went down. I'm concerned that people would try to, if it became unnavigable. These poor people have waited so long and been so patient, and that's why I wanted to talk to you. Regarding the BLM, we have evidence, and we know for a fact the BLM is a part of the Department of Interior. The Department of Interior built this dam through the National Park Service. The dam preceded the BLM by about 14 years. There was no BLM when they built the dam. We've got an offer from Senator Baldwin's people and others in the federal government that said, hey, look, Milwaukee County owns this dam. They have to ask us for help to go and take this to the Department of Interior and streamline this. We can't do this without the county asking us for their help. But they did offer to help. The BLM does seem to be the biggest obstacle at this point. Regarding, and just this one last thing is regarding the EA process is where a government entity does go to the people and ask their opinion. There was an EA on this stuff already for the Blatz Pavilion and for Phase 1. Well, the Blatz Pavilion, they said they were going to return that area to its normal grade, and it's right in the EA. And everybody agreed to that. Well, they haven't returned it to its normal grade. It's a foot and a half taller. It's overgrown with wood and with trees and so forth. And I've asked about this. I said, hey, you said you were going to return it to normal grade. This would be the perfect time. You're in there with the equipment anyhow. Why don't you go and return that back the way it was supposed to be and what you agreed to? And they said, no, we're not going to do that in a discussion with Kevin Haley. So I just wanted to bring these things up. Please continue to support the dam. We're almost past the biggest issues.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thanks. Any questions?
Dave Dorner?
Okay. Good afternoon. I guess it is afternoon now.
Good afternoon.
I would like to talk about the rock ramp options that they've proposed. The three options that they proposed will either increase flooding potential throughout the river, which would be unacceptable, obviously, or the only option, rock ramp option, that was put in there would reduce the water level on a mean basis by 14 to 15 inches throughout the waterway. That will do a couple things. You'll have riverbed exposed, which will then grow vegetation and trees and reduce the channel of the river, exacerbating potential flooding. And it would also, the reduction in water level would also reduce the navigability of the waterway without going in and doing some dredging. And those items would affect flood insurance costs, would affect property values. You'd have your river banks that would have to be, would possibly be needed to be reworked because of a different river than what has traditionally been. So that's all my comments, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Dorner. And finally, Vicki Ross.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, supervisors. It's been a long time since I've been here, but there was a time when we were here almost every month. I think we're going to be seeing a lot of each other again here in the near future. A lot's been said today. I'll try not to be repetitive. I live at 6265 North Sunny Point Road in Glendale, about five lots north of the Bender Bridge and about five lots south of the Clutch Park Dam. So I am at the very northern reach of what we believe is the impoundment, the former impoundment behind the Esterbrook Dam. Couple things. A lot of positives going on. I'm delighted to hear that the easements have been arranged, as Theo pointed out. We are seeing progress finally on this effort after 6 years that we have been waiting a long time to see. People are getting together. People are meeting. We're seeing some things move forward. We all have lots of concerns. There's still a lot to be resolved. One thing I'd like to bring to the attention of the Parks Department and this committee is the issue of the Blatz Pavilion. If you haven't seen it lately, you might want to. The phase one, or the sort of pilot study that Mr. Haley referred to earlier as a proof of concept for the phase one and the phase two work, the environmental analysis done at that time did not contemplate that we would have a 6-year drawdown of the level of the river. So that area now is overgrown with trees, you know, of this diameter, and it's a horrible, ugly eyesore at what should be the centerpiece of the gem of Lincoln Park. It used to be a watered lagoon. People will remember renting boats there. People will remember, you know, being able to sit there and look at a watered lagoon. Well, it's ugly, it's an eyesore, and though we have these two big projects going on, which will bring heavy equipment into that area, the phase two remediation is planned for this year. The Esterbrook Dam repair is still on track to hopefully be resolved this year, whatever solution is selected. We're going to have heavy equipment in that area, but yet remediating that Blatz Pavilion area is not in scope for either project. There's no funding, there's no interest, there's no desire, there's no impetus to solving that problem at a time that seems most practical. So I don't know if this body has the authority to, you know, wield any influence over that situation, but it seems like now would be the right time to address that and get that resolved. So I just leave that, you know, as a concern, and more importantly, an opportunity that this might be a time to find a good solution to that.
I think Director Dargle would agree that it's the scarcity of resources. You'll recall that in 2008, the public passed an advisory referendum asking for a half-cent sales tax to fund parks projects. And, of course, we were met by a rather high wall of silence from the state. They pretended, it seems to me, that the public hadn't spoken. And then 5 years later, we have the Association of Commerce come along proposing that those same dollars most likely be used in their, well, they substituted their judgment for that of the people and would rather use that money to build a basketball arena than to rehab pavilions. So I hope we see this in the historical context in which it belongs. The public did speak.
Right.
The state failed to act.
And as I say, I don't know who has what authority, but, you know, one read would be the Wisconsin.
Authority doesn't mean much without the resources to implement the ideas.
True.
That's our problem.
Yeah, my hope would be that the Wisconsin DNR could be brought to the table to live up to what their environmental assessment said at the time. Conditions have changed since then, and now a different solution is necessary. So perhaps the DNR could be the solution and the funding source for that. But short of that, I would like to thank, you know, the county board for its continued support in finding a resolution to the Esterbrook Dam issue, Director Dargle and his team for finally having us on a track to see something done by the deadline of December 2014. Hopefully, we'll see a resolution this year. Thank you.
Thanks for your comments. Any questions by committee members? Any wrap-up we want to do? Ah, killer. There being no further business before the committee, we stand adjourned.